Jesus warned his followers in Luke 12, "Take care and be on your guard against all covetousness, for one's life does not consist in the abundance of his possessions." Hi, I'm Rob West. You might envy someone who is rich in material possessions, but that's a dangerous road since stuff can't really satisfy your deepest needs. Today, I'll dig into God's Word to discover the source of true abundance, and then we'll take your calls at 800-525-7000. That's 800-525-7000. This is Faith and Finance Live, biblical wisdom for your financial journey. Covetousness is what happens when you see someone else's possessions and want them for yourself. It's part envy and part greed, and completely sinful. But what's so dangerous about that kind of desire? Well, like any sin, its first effect is to draw you away from a right relationship with God. Envy can also destroy your relationships with other people. When you're zeroing in on getting and keeping what you want, you're putting your fleshly desires in God's place. Selfishness obliterates your ability to love God and other people. You know, one problem with a materialistic mindset is that you start to believe more is always better, and you never have enough. Ultimately, covetousness is just a treadmill of frustration and desire. In Ecclesiastes, King Solomon calls it chasing after the wind. Jesus warns his followers against this sin, but he also gives them, and us, the key to a better way of living. One's life does not consist in the abundance of his possessions. In other words, you won't find lasting satisfaction in getting more stuff. Material things just can't give you the life you crave. So what kind of abundance does produce life? Well, as Luke 12 recounts, Jesus gives the answer in a story we know as the parable of the rich fool. He tells of a rich man who is so enamored of his possessions that he decides to tear down his storehouses and build bigger ones, promising himself a long and relaxing retirement. Before the rich man can fulfill his selfish dreams, God comes to him and says, "You fool, this very night your life will be demanded from you. Then who will get what you have prepared for yourself?" Now, Jesus' next words serve as a warning, but also a promise for those who have ears to hear. "This is how it will be with whoever stores up things for themselves, but is not rich toward God." As always, Jesus is addressing the hearts of his followers. He knows we live in a physical world, surrounded by desirable things. But God created men and women for more than just temporary worldly pleasures and achievements. According to Ecclesiastes 3:11, he also has set eternity in the human heart. What we really want, at our core, is abundant life. What we want is God himself. To possess a relationship with the Lord is to be full of his abundance, to be rich toward God. Here's what Jesus says about this in John 10:9. "I am the door. If anyone enters by me, he will be saved, and will go in and out and find pasture. The thief comes only to steal and kill and destroy. I came that they may have life and have it abundantly." Throughout the New Testament, and specifically in the parable of the rich fool, Jesus urges us to take the focus off of me and my stuff and put it where it belongs, on him. True abundance comes from a personal, intimate relationship with God through Christ. In John 15:5, Jesus confirms this, "Whoever abides in me and I in him, he it is that bears much fruit, for apart from me you can do nothing." You see, the tragedy of the rich fool is not that his life was cut short, but that he was looking for abundance in all the wrong places. In his pride and greed, he gave up the opportunity to abide in God and serve others. He failed to choose a life that was eternally rich toward God. Instead, he pursued a foolish life that was rich toward himself. So, are you experiencing abundant life? If not, here's what you can do right now to turn things around. First, get things right between you and the Lord. Surrender your life to Christ. Here's the promise from John 1:12. "To all who did receive him, to those who believed in his name, he gave the right to become children of God." When your desires are getting in the way and pride and envy are making you miserable, tell the Lord about it and ask for help. Another action you can take to experience God's abundance is to read God's Word. Check out a Bible reading app like the Bible Project, read Scripture or Through the Word, or just pick up the Bible and read the Gospel of John. Finally, find a body of believers who can encourage you and hold you accountable. The Christian life was never meant to be lived alone. By the way, you can check out our new study called Rich Toward God at faithfi.com. Just click shop. That's faithfi.com. Click shop. Back with your calls after this. Stick around.
The opinions offered during this program represent the personal or professional opinions of the participants, given for informational purposes only. Any information provided is not intended to replace advice from a financial, medical, legal, or other professional who understands your specific situation.
Delighted to have you with us today on Faith and Finance Live here on Moody Radio. I'm Rob West. It's time to take your calls and questions today, 800-525-7000. We've got some lines open. They will fill quickly, so now is your opportunity to call. Again, 800-525-7000. You know, we started today by talking about that incredible parable that Jesus told in Luke 12 about being rich toward God. It's amazing. It covers so many big themes around money, and it's a potential to compete with our hearts. As Jesus was responding to a request from someone in his audience there in his third year of ministry, earthly ministry, as he was heading to Jerusalem for the last time, asked to settle an inheritance dispute. He doesn't take the case, but uses it, as he did so often in these last days before he was crucified, to really address the heart posture of those he was speaking to. And this particular parable dealing with materialism and how it can compete with the Lord for first position in our lives, how we can put our trust and our faith in the things of this world, not recognizing God is the provider of all of it, thinking that we somehow in our own power were the ones that were creators of whatever it is we have, and that we can put our trust in those things. That person in the parable was, of course, called a fool. But this idea of true abundance, what is our true abundance? If we can't put our sights on the things of this world to meet the desires of our hearts for fulfillment and abundance, what then can we direct our affection toward? The answer, of course, is God himself. It's not that God is the access to our abundance. It's that he is our abundance. And this is brought out clearly in this amazing new study we just produced at FaithFi. It's called Rich Toward God. It's a beautifully designed four-week study that unpacks all of these incredible themes around true abundance and the pride we can have in prosperity and the uncertainty of tomorrow. And then it wraps up in the fourth week as you take a deep dive into what does it really mean to live rich toward God, which is this profound statement that's right there at the end of this parable. If you're looking for a great study to dive into, deep into scripture with perhaps a small group in your neighborhood or at church, check out this study. It might be exactly what you're looking for. You'll find it at faithfi.com. That's faithfi.com. Just click on shop at the top of the page. You'll see it right there. And if you order 10 copies or more, you can get a 25% discount. But we'd love for you to order your copy. Check it out. Read through it, whether it's for personal study or a small group. I know you'll be encouraged by it. Our team has gone through it. We put a lot of time and effort into creating it, and I think it'll be a real blessing to you. Again, faithfi.com. All right, let's head to the phones today. We're going to begin in Georgia. Hi, Florence. Thank you for calling. Go ahead. Hi, Florence. Are you with us? All right. It looks like we don't have Florence. We will work to get her on the line. Let's instead go to Nashville, Tennessee. Go right ahead, Pam.
Hi, sir. Thanks for taking my call. So I want to try to access some of the equity in my home, but I'm a low-income person, and I was wondering if there are some programs that would allow one to access the equity without, say, refinancing or having to qualify based on income.
Yeah. You know, the best way to do that if you're wanting to tap into the home equity is through what's called a reverse mortgage, which essentially through a reverse mortgage, you would pay off the existing mortgage, But moving forward, you'd no longer have a payment. So that's the starting place. Now, if you did nothing more than that, you'd at least get rid of that payment, which would increase your cash flow by, at a minimum, the amount you were sending for principal and interest every month. Now, what would happen to that balance? Well, through the reverse mortgage that you're not paying on, and you could if you wanted to, but you wouldn't have to, then the balance that was paid off, the existing mortgage balance, would then grow with interest, commensurate interest rate to what's the prevailing rate right now, plus some fees. It would grow over time. Your home would continue to appreciate too. And then either at your passing or upon the home sale, the proceeds of the sale of the home would then pay off whatever balance existed. Now, beyond that, if you had enough equity, you could also potentially get an income stream out of the equity that was remaining. It would just depend on how much equity you had at the start. Now, the difference with a reverse mortgage and a conventional mortgage is, with a conventional mortgage, the home is collateral, but you're also personally responsible for it. So if the home ever lost value, or in the case of a reverse mortgage, you took out more money through the monthly payments and you lived a really long time and they ended up paying you out more than the home was worth for some variety of reasons, you're never on the hook, or your estate is never on the hook for more than just your home being the collateral. If the sale of the home doesn't satisfy it, the government, the FHA, the Federal Housing Administration, actually steps in and pays the difference. And you'd pay a fee up front for that insurance, if you will, that the FHA would cover. So that's what's available to you. Let me ask, how much equity do you have in your home today? Do you know?
It's at least 100.
And what do you think your home is worth?
Between 3 and 325.
Okay, yeah. So you owe somewhere around $200,000 on it, do you think?
177.
177. Okay, so you don't quite have 50%, or you might. Probably not quite 50%. You probably don't have quite 50% equity. Is that right?
Oh, right. It's about 100.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So you probably would not qualify then for a reverse mortgage if you've got 100 in equity on a $300,000 home, because you'd need a minimum of 50%. So then the options are, okay, where do I go from here? I wouldn't like you to tap into that home equity through a traditional conventional mortgage, because that's going to add an additional, it'd be a second mortgage, or you'd have to refinance and perhaps get rid of the good rate that you have now. All of that's going to increase or decrease your cash flow, because now you're going to have a bigger monthly payment, and that just becomes problematic down the road. So probably your best option at this point, if you need to right size your budget, Florence, is to sell that home and downsize, and perhaps take that home equity and buy something smaller, perhaps where you have a much smaller mortgage. Maybe you still have to keep a mortgage, but it's not a, you know, $200,000 mortgage. You know, maybe it's 50 or 100. And that just drops your monthly bills and allows you to balance your budget. But apart from that, I wouldn't feel good about you trying to live off of the equity in your home as a home equity loan or a new first mortgage. Does that make sense?
I see. Yes. One more question. I was reading, doing some research, actually, and I saw something where Fannie Mae had some kind of refi program for low-income people. Are you familiar with that?
There are definitely options out there periodically through Fannie Mae for qualifying borrowers. I don't have the details on that. I do some research on that to see if, as a low-income borrower, there definitely are some options through the Federal Housing Finance Agency. So I would check into that. I don't have, unfortunately, any more details on that today. But you're right. There are programs like that out there. Hey, thanks for calling today. Taking your calls today on Faith and Finance Live, 800-525-7000. Stick around. We'll be right back.
Hey, great to have you with us today on Faith and Finance Live. I'm Rob West. Hey, if you're looking for a financial advisor, one that shares your values as a believer, we recommend the Certified Kingdom Advisor designation. You can find one of 1,500 Certified Kingdom Advisors, perhaps one even in your area, when you visit faithfi.com. That's faithfi.com. Just click Find a Professional at the top of the page. All right, let's go back to the phones. Florence has been waiting patiently in Georgia. Go right ahead.
I just have one question for you,
yes, ma'am.
It's a real concern of mine. I had heard on a Christian radio station that they were saying they were going to do away with cash in December 2023, and how are we to plan for that?
Do away, let me make sure I understand the question. Do away with what?
Cash. Money.
Cash. Got it. Yes, ma'am.
Yes.
You know, there's a lot of claims going out there, Florence, so I can understand your concern that the U.S. government is planning to eliminate cash at various times. Certainly one of those claims is December of this year. But those are false. You can look at any number of sources and find that this stems generally from misunderstandings or misinformation about either digital currency developments or what the Federal Reserve put in place last year, which is called FedNow. Now, let me explain both of these and the status of them. With regard to a digital currency, President Biden put an executive order out that asked for research to be done into the potential development of a U.S. central bank digital currency, what's often referred to as a CBDC. It doesn't call for the replacement of cash. In fact, it explicitly states that this would be supplementary or supplemental to cash. So you would continue to have your cash, but you'd also have a digital dollar as well in the form of a central bank digital currency. Am I a fan of a CBDC? Absolutely not. I don't like that option simply because it would give the Treasury too much insight and potential control into our financial transactions, and therefore they could impose social controls over the use of money. Now, again, the only thing the executive order did was call for research. Secondly, the Federal Reserve has said if there ever was a CBDC, and doesn't mean they couldn't change their mind, but at least at this point, they're saying it would not replace, but it would be in addition to cash. But keep in mind, it literally, and I mean that, it literally will take an act of Congress for this to happen, for this to be put into place, because coinage is a congressional function. And so, this wouldn't happen until Congress voted on it. And there's a lot of division for good reason in Congress right now about a CBDC. So I don't think we're anywhere near a place where, even if the president was really pushing for it, we would ever see it come to pass, because I can't imagine Congress would gain consensus around this. Now, what about the second part of that? And it's something called FedNow. What is that? Well, FedNow is a payment system that allows for faster bank transfers. It's not a new currency. It's not a move toward, replacing the dollar. It's simply a payment system that's more modern. So today, you can make payments initiated by your bank through a payment system, but there are certain hours of operation. It also doesn't work on the weekends. The idea by the FedNow platform is that banks could subscribe to it and create 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year, payment processing, so that somebody could pay their bill and know that it's paid immediately, regardless of the time of day or weekend, so that somebody can have confidence their payment is handled. That's not available directly to the public. It's only available to the banks, and about 9,000 banks now are using it, and that number is growing. So I think you can put those concerns aside for now. Doesn't mean we shouldn't stay vigilant and aware of what's happening with CBDCs, but there's nothing on the table today that's anywhere close to a CBDC coming into existence, and certainly not a replacement of cash.
Can I explain why I even had that concern?
Sure.
Because I know that when I read my Bible, I know that this is like the signs of the times are coming. There's no doubt.
Yeah.
And that's what made me more concerned, was knowing that, you know, what part are we in at that time?
Yes.
You know? And
right.
I just wanted a biblical word to just give me confirmation. That's all I wanted.
Yes. Well, what we know from God's word is that no one knows the day or the time, not in even the angels in heaven nor the Son, but only the Father, is what we read in Matthew 24:36. We do read the end times and understand there's plenty of prophecy. We know there will come a time where Jesus will return. But we also, so we need to be people of understanding. And we need to be biblically minded and literate about what God's word says. But I also think we don't need to get caught up in a lot of the fear-mongering that's happening with regard to misinformation. And so specifically, as it relates to what we know today, there is no replacement or end in sight to cash. And so any insinuation otherwise would just not be factual. But I certainly appreciate the question. It's a great one, Florence, and it's one, you know, we need to continue to monitor. Thank you for calling today. We appreciate it. 800-525-7000 is the number to call, to Fishers, Indiana. Hi, Linda. Go ahead.
Yes, hi. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure.
So I'm in my late 50s and trying to figure out, you know, when to start taking Social Security, when to, you know, I owe $144 on my home. It's worth about $335, $340. So, you know, I'm trying to pay off $20,000 in debt. Just some really good, I need some really good financial babysitting, so to speak, kind of hold my hand through this stage.
Yeah, well, that's really helpful. So you said, what did you say your age was?
So I'm 58.
Okay, good. And the debt, and by the way, you hear the music because we're headed to a break. I'm going to give you my thoughts on the other side of it. But the $20,000 in debt, what type of debt is that?
It's a second mortgage.
Second mortgage, got it. Okay, this is really helpful, Linda. I'd be happy to weigh in, at least get you pointed in the right direction, give you some of my thoughts. So you stay right there. We'll take the other part of your question right on the other side of this break. Much more to come just around the corner on Faith and Finance Live. Stay with us. Great to have you with us today on Faith and Finance Live. We're so delighted you're with us today. Taking your calls and questions, 800-525-7000. That's 800-525-7000. Before the break, we were talking to Linda in Fishers. She's just wondering kind of how to order her finances in this season of life. She's 58 years old. She's got a couple $100,000 in equity on her first mortgage on her home that's worth about $340,000. She has a second mortgage that was broken up into two pieces, but that balloons in October, and so she's going to have to pay that off or refinance that. She's got a total of four 401ks, a few that came through a QDRO, which happens when you have a divorce, and then a fourth one with her current employer. So about $150,000 in 401ks. And Linda, let me ask you, what do you have, if anything, left over at the end of the month after the bills are paid, considering that you are putting into your 401k and you're obviously servicing the first and second mortgage? But do you usually have any margin or cushion at the end of the month?
Yes, I do. Probably okay. $700 or $800.
$700 or $800?
Right.
Okay. Yeah, very good. But I know you had to wipe out most of your savings because of some home renovations recently, so you have just a couple of $100,000 there. I'm thrilled to hear that you're living within your means. That's great. And so we've got to look at what our options are for this $20,000. You're sure that it has to be paid in full, all $20,000 of it, as of October? Is that right?
Only 10 as of October.
Okay. All right. So we've got a few months left, right? So we've got potentially, you know, April, May, June, July, August, September. So 6 months, let's say you could put away, you know, $800 a month on that. You could, you know, almost get $5,000 there. Now, that would drop your savings back down, but at least half of it would be covered. I know you were thinking you'd pull it out of your 401k. I mean, I don't love that option in the sense that, you know, that's going to be an early withdrawal penalty because you're not 59 and a half, then it's all going to be taxable. So I would look to minimize you know, what you're pulling out of that 401k, if possible. Let's try to fund as much of this out of current cash flow as you can. You know, I think the fact that you've got a couple of $1,000 in savings, that's great. We want to hang on to that. So if you could really dial your budget back with a goal of saving as much as possible between now and October, take, you know, a very little amount, hopefully less than $5,000 from that 401k as a withdrawal distribution, pay the penalty, pay the tax. But now that second mortgage is gone, and hopefully that $700 or $800 plus what you were sending, if anything, to the second mortgage is now maybe $900 or $1,000 a month. Our first goal at that point is to rebuild your emergency fund to 3 to 6 months expenses. Then we want to start looking long term. I know you have a generous 6% match on your current employer's 401k. We want to take full advantage of that. And then we want to get to a goal of you saving 10 to 15% of your pay. The good news is, you know, you're 58, you've got some time on your side, and you've got $150,000 saved. We want to try to allow you to work as long as you can. I would love for you, especially with your bills being covered, for you to delay Social Security as long as possible. Now, you know, as a divorcee, you know, you do have the option that you can receive benefits based on your ex-spouse's, you know, record, if that marriage lasted 10 years or longer. So that would be an option, and you could let your own benefits continue to grow based on your work record. So we could look at that as a supplement to income. But with regard to your benefits that would be reduced by taking it early, I'd love for you to wait as long as possible and let that grow, because if we can get that up, you know, then that's just a bigger check every month that's going to take a bigger portion of your monthly lifestyle spending when you get to that season where perhaps the Lord redirects you away from paid work, or you just can't work physically any longer. But does all that make sense? What thoughts and questions do you have?
Yeah, it makes great sense. I do not have a penalty because I'm 55 and a half on those three 401ks.
Oh, okay. So for the rule of 55, you can pull that out. Okay. So that makes sense. So then it would just be that, you know, added to your taxable income, and you'd have to account for that. I still would love to not increase your tax liability and keep as much as possible growing for the future in a tax deferred environment, because we don't want to think, you know, as your time horizon between 58 and 65, we want to think of your time horizon, if you're in good health and the Lord tarries, between 58 and 98. So if that's the way we look at it, now all of a sudden we've got four decades to make this money grow, but also to have it last, which means we want to keep as much of that in a tax-deferred environment, growing on a compounded basis for the future.
Makes sense. Yeah. Fabulous. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. And I know you mentioned, just when we talked off the air a moment ago, about just the question marks around Social Security. And I get that. We all read the headlines about 2035 being the time where the Social Security Trust Fund, if no changes are made, will be depleted of its assets. At that point, current workers would provide 75% of current benefits. So they'd still be able to pay 75 cents on the dollar. Now, am I thinking that's what's going to happen? Absolutely not. This is too much of a political hot potato for Congress officials not to deal with it. How are they going to deal with it? It's probably going to be a combination of higher FICA taxes, a further, you know, pushing out the full retirement age, you know, things like that, that are going to preserve benefits for existing retirees and shore up the trust fund for those coming behind them. So I like the idea of you, despite the challenges we have economically in this country and our runaway spending and national debt, and that's a whole other topic for another day, I still like the idea of you letting that check continuing to build and not pulling that money early, personally.
Okay. All right. Wonderful. All right. Thank you.
Very good. I appreciate your call today. We're so thankful that you were on the program. If we can help you further along the way, don't hesitate to give us a call. May the Lord bless you. We're taking your calls today, folks, at 800-525-7000. Again, that number is 800-525-7000. Let's go to our next caller in Florida. Hi, Barbara. Go right ahead.
Hello. Yes, I have a question. I am going to be receiving money from a trust that's being dissolved, and I need to know, will I have to pay capital gains on the portion that I receive?
Yeah, so here's the way that works. If you're receiving it as an inheritance, were these assets, did they belong to you or to someone else? Who was the grantor on this?
It was my mother-in-law.
Okay, and so you're a named beneficiary of receiving the proceeds of the trust upon her death, is that right?
She passed in 88. My husband was the primary beneficiary. He received interest and medical expenses from the trust. He passed a few months ago, and so the remainder beneficiaries receive a portion of the trust.
Okay. So these assets are subject to capital gains, and that's generally either to the trust or the beneficiary upon the sale of the assets inside the trust. At death, which happened back in the 80s, there would have been a stepped-up basis, but since then, any assets inside the trust would be subject to taxes. So I think the next step for you is to get with a CPA. Do you have a CPA that you've worked with?
No, I don't.
Okay. So I would find a godly CPA. If you don't have one, you can go to our website, faithfi.com, click Find a Professional, ask any one of those men or women for a referral. I know you had a second part to your question, so stay there. We'll get to it right after the break. We'll be right back. Great to have you with us today on Faith and Finance Live. I'm Rob West. We're taking your calls and questions today. Let's head right back to the phones. Before the break, we were talking to Barbara in Florida. She's got a living trust that has the proceeds from the sale of her mother-in-law back in the 80s. It was the assets were retained in the trust to pay medical expenses of her husband. He's since passed away, and she's wondering about the capital gains taxes for the monies received out of the trust. And we had talked about her connecting with a CPA to go over the taxation on those. Normally, funds received from a trust are subject to different taxation than funds from ordinary investment accounts, but the trust beneficiaries pay taxes on the income and other distributions. Keep in mind, with a revocable trust, we're not avoiding any access or any taxes because the grantor still owes them, and then they're eventually paid out to the beneficiaries. The trust beneficiaries don't have to pay taxes on the returned principal from the trust's assets. But, this does get pretty complicated pretty quickly, and that's why having a professional walk alongside you is important. Barbara, did you have a second part to that question?
Yes. The second question is, should I give a portion to my two stepdaughters before or after the taxes are taken out?
Yes. Generally, what you would do is you would, pay the taxes on the money as it comes out when it's due. And then you could just make a gift to your children or grandchildren. How much did you want to gift to them?
$8,000 each.
Okay, yeah, which you can absolutely do. There's a annual gift exclusion, which for 2024 is $18,000, which just means that you can give up to $18,000 to any individual for the tax year 2024, and you don't have to let the IRS know. So typically, you would pull that money out of the trust if you're able to do so, and then you'd make that gift over to the grandchildren.
Okay. That's what I needed to know. Thank you so much.
You're welcome, Barbara. Thank you for your call today. We appreciate it. To Chicago. Hi, Michael. How can I help?
Yes, thank you for taking my call. I have a question regarding my retirement plan and my beneficiary. I have a 457 retirement plan, and I have my beneficiary as my wife. If something should happen to me, obviously she would get the money. But I was wondering, since she doesn't have any retirement income set up, would she be able to roll it over to her, as she would be able to make it as her retirement savings, and so that she wouldn't get hit so hard on the taxes?
That's exactly right. So as a beneficiary, your wife could roll over the 457 retirement plan, which is just like a 401k, but a different section of the tax code, because you're a government worker, probably. Is that right?
Correct.
Yeah. So she'd be able to roll that over into most other retirement account types, her own 401k, or in the case of her not having a company-sponsored plan or access to a plan, she would roll that over into a traditional IRA, an individual retirement account. That would preserve that tax-deferred environment. That would not be a taxable event. And then she could just continue to allow that to grow. She would only pay taxes on it as it comes out whenever she chose to do that.
Excellent. And there's nothing I can do to prepare that other than give her instructions.
That's exactly right. And make sure that she is the named beneficiary on that 457 account.
And okay. Thank you so much.
All right, Michael. Yes, sir. Thank you for your call today. To Fort Lauderdale, Tavia, how can I help?
Hi, I'm calling because I got in touch with a Christian credit counselor. I have about $9,000 to $10,000 in credit card debt. And they were able to, you know, break it down how the whole program works. But I'm just wondering how that will look in the eyes of a lender for future financing, because I am looking to purchase a home within the next year.
Yeah.
So I'm just kind of worried if, you know, how that will look.
Sure. What is your credit score today?
My credit score is about 620.
Okay. And what is your credit utilization? Do you know what this $9,000 or $10,000, what percent it is of the total credit available to you today?
Yes, it's all very high. All of my credit cards are maxed out, yes.
Yeah, okay. So here's the thing. The fact that you're in a credit counseling program does not factor into your credit score. It's not a part of the credit scoring algorithm. So if you can use credit counseling to get on a plan through lower interest rates and a level monthly payment to get those balances coming down, the lowering of your credit utilization, meaning the outstanding balances as you pay them down, become, you know, a smaller percentage of the total available to you, is actually going to drive your score up. Now, what's the downside, if any? Well, the only potential downside is that it will be noted on your credit report that you're in a debt management program. Again, it doesn't factor into the credit score. Could a lender choose to use that against you? Sure, they can do whatever they want. But in my view, you already have a low score. And so anything that's going to help you drive those balances down as quickly as possible, which is going to come through the lower interest rates. And by the way, even on credit counseling, if you can dial back your lifestyle and cut your spending and send extra beyond the scheduled level monthly payment, that's just going to pull those balances down even quicker. That's going to do more to get your score up and give you become more attractive to a lender than any harm that would be done by that notation, in my view. Does that make sense?
Yes, that makes perfect sense. Thank you so much, and I really enjoy your program. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Tavia. I appreciate that. All right, let's head to Ohio. Craig, go ahead, sir.
Yes, I was wondering about annuities and what would be a good amount to invest in an annuity. I mean, I was told that if you invested like $200,000, that you would get a guarantee of $16,200 in return.
Hmm. Yeah, it really depends on what you're trying to accomplish. So what investable assets do you have today, Craig?
About $300 in cash.
All right. And so those are not in retirement plans?
No.
Okay. Do you have anything in qualified accounts, retirement accounts?
I just get Social Security of about $1,000 a month.
Okay. And are you pulling anything out of the $300 to supplement your Social Security to cover your bills?
Yeah, somewhat as I go along, yeah, a little bit.
What do you think you pull out over either a month's time, or if it's not monthly, any idea what you've pulled out over the last 12 months?
Well, in the last 12 months, I've pulled out quite a bit for, like, some medical things, issues.
Okay.
So it's been $10,000, probably $12,000.
Okay. Do you think $1,000 a month on average is what you're going to need moving forward, or would you expect to pull less?
I would expect to pull a little more, yeah, somewhat more.
So more than $1,000 a month?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Well, here's you've got a couple of options. I mean, one is we need to get this positioned for it with a longer term approach. I mean, even though rates are very attractive right now, and if you had this in a laddered CD, maybe you're getting 5% on this money, which is great. You get 4.5% right now in a high yield savings with FDIC insurance. That's not going to be available forever. So we need to take a long term. Even at 73, with some health issues, we still want to plan for this money to need to last you the next 20 years. And so we want it invested. The question is, do you want to assume that risk and keep full access to the money? Or do you want to transfer that risk to somebody else, namely an insurance company, and lose some access to the money? And so you've got to decide which is a higher priority for you. Typically, I'd recommend somebody in your situation, which doesn't sound like you're in bad shape, would take this $300,000. We'd carve out maybe 12 months, somewhere between 6 and 12 months worth of emergency savings, probably 6 months. So maybe that's a $2,500 a month times 6 months. So maybe we put $15,000 aside in high yield savings, and then we take the rest, $285,000, and we'd invest it. Maybe we put 30% of it in stocks, 60% in bonds, maybe 10% in gold, have an advisor manage it. The goal would be to allow you to pull, about $1,000 a month from it and maintain the balance. And then you'd have access to the principal, the $285,000, if you ever needed it for long-term care or whatever that might be. The other approach is to say, no, I don't want to take that risk. I don't sleep well at night. I want to give this to an insurance company in exchange for a guaranteed return, and then let them take it and invest it. And then if at any point you wanted to convert it, what's called annuitize it, which just means you're converting it to an income stream, then they'd pay you an income stream for the rest of your life. And depending on the fine print, you may or may not have anything left over at your death for your heirs. So which sounds like it'd be a better fit for you?
Probably maybe the latter.
Okay. All right. Yeah. And so then I think it's a matter of not all annuities are created equal. Among annuities, you have fixed annuities where they give you a guaranteed return. You have variable annuities where they invest it. You get a portion of the upside, but they put a floor on the downside, so you can't lose money. How do they do that? Well, they don't give you all the upside. They keep some of the upside for themselves. And then the same applies at some point after the accumulation phase at the time of your choosing. You could annuitize it and convert it to an income stream and live on it the rest of your life. But as I said, they're not all created equal. So I think in either case, you need to get with an advisor, somebody who shares your values as a believer, who can talk you through these options. Not try to sell you something, but understand your goals and objectives. And if an annuity is the best option for you because of the tax advantages and the guaranteed growth and the potential income stream that you don't have to worry about for the rest of your life, great. But let's them help you understand what's the best type of annuity for you and make sure you've thought through all the fine print. So I'd head to our website, faithfi.com, and click Find a Professional and interview two or three certified Kingdom advisors in your area. Thanks for your call today. Faith and Finance Live is a partnership between Moody Radio and Faith Fi. Thank you to Lynn, Amy, Dan, and Taylor, plus the entire team here at Faith and Finance. God bless you. We'll see you tomorrow. Bye-bye.